We'll do, I guess, our intro. I never introduced you because we just started talking. This is Allison Stoner.
Hey.
The OG cool kid. And no, seriously, that's how I look at you. I think you're like the OG cool kid.
Wow. Healing my inner child. No, I never thought I was
real.
Cool.
I even like posted you like on my story because I would love your outfits. And I was literally, I was like, Allison Stoner inspo. Like, love them.
That's amazing. Yeah. Thank
they
you.
They were so badass. Like, I just thought, like, so cool.
Well, okay, now I have to tell you the truth, which is my friend Veronica
styled you
is a stylist mm-hmm. and lets me play in her closet.
Mm-hmm.
You might really love Veronica Gray.
Were they the ones of you as a kid?
Oh, no.
Oh, those are the ones, like, they were badass, like, when you were, like, skater kid. Like, that's what, I was, like, inspired. I'm not even kidding. Like, from when you were, like, 7 even.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That might be real. Okay. Fashion icon.
No, that is. I think that was authentic. Yeah. I don't know how else to intro.
Fashion icon. That's all
fashion
you need to
icon.
Know.
From age 7. From age 7. And you definitely have seen them in some of your favorite shows and TV shows.
Woo.
Shows and movies.
And here we
Welcome
are.
Welcome to this podcast.
Thanks for having me. Let's get into it.
Let's get into it.
You have no idea where we're about to go.
You have like a really great voice. No, I mean, like,
thank
you're
you.
Also a voice actor. Obviously, I listened to your podcast and like the first like 10 seconds, I was like, because I feel like I've heard your voice just because I've seen you like on shows and stuff like that. Mm. But I didn't realize like how like round it is. It's like a perfect tone. I was like, whoa, this makes sense that she has a podcast. Like, it's really beautiful to listen to.
That's so kind. Maybe it's as I'm aging and the voice is just settling a bit more, but I've heard some really kind feedback about the vocal tone, and that's not feedback I ever had as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Some things hopefully are aging well. The wrinkles on my face, not so much.
I mean,
but
like
the vocal tone.
Yeah, but like to a degree, I guess like you did get praised a little bit because you did do like voice acting. Like people must have recognized like
they have a good
voice.
I don't know. It's with voice acting, it can really be a shot in the dark whether you even use your own tone or not.
Yeah.
A lot of the characters I did play in previous animated gigs were close to my speaking voice, but many weren't.
Yeah.
So, and it often I played a lot of, you know, toddlers and just like infants. So we were making
infants.
Sounds. Yeah. Like, I would, if I warmed up, I would demonstrate, but you know, just cooing and kind of this scream cry, just like fresh out the womb, new to this world, baby noises. Yeah, it's been interesting. And I had a podcast before this called Simplexity, and that was about interviewing experts from different industries to help simplify concepts that the average person might find really complicated.
Yeah,
but you know, it didn't have the same kind of viewership as Dear Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense. Like, this is such a niche community of people who are fascinated by, you know, child stardom and entertainment. So, yeah, the pool was a little larger to begin with.
Yeah. Like, celebrity in general is just so interesting to people. Plus, like, you have a unique perspective. And, like, it kind of reminds me of, like, the resurgence of, like, Jeanette McCurdy in a sense. Like, everyone, like, knows who you are and, like, would love to hear what you have to say and, like, your unique perspective. So I think that's, like, everyone's like, oh, shit. Like, plus, like, do you write it beforehand? Are you free speaking?
No, I wrote the scripts about a year prior.
Oh, damn.
And I actually filmed all of them and had interviews with guests and then I worked with a production company and the deal fell through, and so I wasn't able to use any of that footage, so I had to start from scratch.
Wait, why couldn't you use like the footage, like you had interviews filmed?
Yes.
Okay.
With these wonderful guests, and then because the deal fell through, they owned the footage.
My God.
So I had to start over, which, you know, it helped crystallize this idea for me that it's okay if it's just me. A lot of times when you're starting a podcast or a project, you have to ask yourself, do I believe in the vision enough that if I were to be alone with a microphone, people would still show up?
Yeah.
And sometimes that's not the best format, but I thought actually maybe for the first season, just explaining this whole landscape will give people an overview. And then second season, when we bring people in, you're already coming to the table aware of these ideas and what's happening with finances and social media and family dynamics. So we turned it into something beautiful. And by we, I mean, it's just two other people who we film at my home, and you know, it's a rapid production and edit schedule, as you know, you just kind of churn and churn and churn in. And then my favorite part is seeing people's responses. Because this podcast, interestingly, you don't just see comments that are like, great episode, or that wasn't my cup of tea. People are sharing paragraphs and paragraphs. They're life stories in comments every single episode. And I read them and I'm seeing what's resonating and the conversations it's starting. It's really powerful. So I'm grateful that I still went forward, even though there have been bumps and challenges.
Was the original podcast with guests kind of the same format as Dear Hollywood?
No.
Or what was it initially?
Originally, which I've never said this anywhere, so it's an exclusive, but no one's ever asked. Yeah. So originally, it was broken down by topic, and I would give an overview of the topic. I'd bring in a guest who was from entertainment and could speak to their experience, and then I had a therapist who would help analyze what was going on. And
I'm so pissed. I can't watch this. Are you kidding?
I know. So maybe we'll bring that back for another season because I just wanted to make sure it was more informed than just sharing our stories without some concrete takeaways for how we can be more mindful.
Well, it's interesting because it's like this side, the truth. In terms of like psychology, was that the intention pretty much?
Yeah, I think while I know that people might be showing up to listen for Hollywood gossip, my hope was they would find their own story in these topics and along the way start reflecting on their own healing journey, their own childhoods. And so that's why I wanted to bring in, you know, an expert just in case, but instead I thankfully, because of my company, Movement Genius, work with psychotherapists day in and day out. So I've had people vet the material and they're watching as things release. You know, I did an episode that talks about dissociation and gratefully, the doctor who trained me for some of my certifications is an expert in dissociation.
Yeah.
So they were able to review and comment and say, hey, like this is how we want to present it so it doesn't add to more stigma for people who, you know, on the spectrum of dissociation, it can just be a minor split from your sense of self all the way to dissociative identity disorder where there are sub-personalities. And I don't even want, I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I'm like, go listen to Dr. Jamie Marich.
Wait, what are you certified in?
I have a couple certifications, one in psychological first aid, which essentially when we look at people experiencing physical trauma, we talk about, you know, immediately what can we do to help stabilize the patient, et cetera. Whereas with psychological first aid, if something happens and it's not necessarily a physical matter, mentally, we still want to be able to help someone come to a more balanced state. And it can be the difference between an event feeling so overwhelming for someone that it does register as trauma in their system versus if you can be there right away and create a safe space to process, express, release that energy. Sometimes it might just be, you know, a challenging moment, but it doesn't get stored in the body in quite the same way. So there's that certification. Oh, and I should be clear that like it also helps the person assess, do we need to send them for further support and counsel? Or is this person like actually okay and can move on with their day?
What specifically assesses that, like when you say?
There's like a criteria, there are steps to follow, and a lot of it, unsurprisingly, starts with helping people feel safe and secure enough. Because if the body is in a threat response, you lose access to parts of your brain, you know, that involve logic and reasoning. And so you really first have to help someone return to a safe enough baseline so that you can really check in. 10 out of 10 recommend everyone get this. They have shorter, like 1 day courses for free that you can get on like Coursera. And yeah, I'm like not sponsored. I think because of the way social media is designed and the fact that we're like seeing a barrage of intense videos all day long, we could all benefit from understanding like what does it mean to create a psychologically safe environment for other people, for ourselves. So there's that certification. Then there's another for trauma-informed movement facilitation. And it's not like just dance classes.
Yeah.
It's also somatic movement. So yeah. things that strengthen the mind-body connection, again, help people notice their inner experience and start to map out the story that they tell through their body language. And I find it to be super fascinating. So mm-hmm.
yeah.
it's a blast to get these certifications. Yeah. And it also has proven to be so helpful when writing for Dear Hollywood and other projects, because I'm coming to it with, you know, more of a critical and researched, trained lens, mm-hmm. Not just, you know, a former kid actor being yeah. like, and then this happened. And there's room for both, right? Like, yeah, it's important totally. To just collect stories. But also, I was like, how can I do this differently? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to add more to this conversation.
Did you always have the interest in psychology like this?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think my interest in psychology was reflected in learning about characters.
Interesting.
Because when you're trying to play a role, I remember an acting coach telling me this. There was an audition for this bratty cheerleader. Mm-hmm. And even the fact that I named the character as bratty meant I was already judging them instead of trying to understand what life events led them to perhaps react that way or speak in that tone. And so the acting coach said, you have to try and have compassion for all of your characters. Otherwise, when you go into the room and audition, people are going to see Allison making fun of the character. Mm-hmm. They're not going to see the character's truth. And so at a young age, I was like, okay, I really need to walk a mile in this person's shoes so that I can honestly bring their truth forward. And I think that just continued to spark interest because it helped me understand people. It helped mm-hmm. me make sense of my own life. And when I think of psychology, I also sort of see it as engineering. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a math problem to me. Yeah. I'm like, A plus B equals C. This happened, that led to this. And I like to reverse engineer things. So mm-hmm. in some ways, that's my fascination with psychology.
Would you say it's like a search for truth?
I mean, that's a deep question. Yes, but like, what mm-hmm. do we mean when we say truth, right? There's like claiming that this was objectively what happened, mm-hmm. but even that is influenced by our subjective perception of what yeah. happened. But yes, I think you're pointing to something that some people find kind of strange about me, which is I don't watch any films or mm-hmm. TV shows. I don't have a TV. I don't have Netflix. The only kinds of media I like are factual, mm-hmm. documentary, nonfiction,
yeah.
because I'm like, tell me exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just a counterbalance to growing up being in an imaginary world. Don't tell me how the story develops. Just tell me the point.
Also, to your point, like talking about somatic therapy, out of curiosity, like which, because I just started somatic therapy. And
oh,
I know,
wow.
I know a lot of people actually who are like getting more into it. And I also yeah. Have dissociation problems as well.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Those are like the two things that's like really relevant to
yeah,
just
yeah.
like my like healing journey.
Totally.
What exercises do you do in somatic therapy?
Oh, there are so many.
They're so random, too.
I know.
Like, they're the weirdest. It's not yoga. It's not. It's like
no.
this other thing.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because some of the exercises feel irrelevant at first, mm-hmm. but then you realize they're kind of like building blocks to help develop some other skills. And then one day you're like, I understand why we were doing that now. I didn't know that my first therapist was a somatic informed therapist. She was so patient. She would spend session after session just asking me, okay, you're naming this emotion. Where do you feel that in your body? Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have words for it. Mm-hmm. I can't name the location, the size, the shape, the color. Like,
yeah.
help me out. And she would even sometimes be like, okay, you're mentioning the word anger. Your hands are in fists. Mm-hmm. Did you even notice that? And I would be like, nope, didn't even see. So the first layer for me was simply like learning how to tune in. But she said something super important, which is if you've experienced any kind of trauma, you have to move through this process so slowly
mm-hmm.
because you don't want to try and force yourself to feel something that's so intense that you end up just traumatizing yourself further and then shutting offline as a response.
Yeah.
So I found my kind of go-to survival strategy was to just like turn off, dissociate, kind of collapse. Like, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but I would have a hard conversation with a loved one and I would just feel my body get tired and almost like fall asleep in the conversation. And I didn't want to be rude, but my body could not handle the discomfort and it would just collapse.
Yeah.
And so she and I very slowly worked on, like, she would say, just peel back the right top corner of this, feel it for a little bit, and then like return, you know, to the place that's manageable. And then when you feel like, okay, it's called titration, you know, you feel a little and then you return to a safety resource, and then you feel a little more, and then you return to safety, and you sort of thread back and forth until you can think of it. There was a poet who talked about it like stitching a wound. So you're like kind of dipping into the tougher space and then dipping into the safer space, back and forth until that wound has been reprocessed. We just really dived in here. Like,
no, I find it interesting. Okay. Honestly, that's why I'm like curious. I'm like, I wonder what
geek out. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Did you ever do the exercise where you have to like push against a wall?
I am familiar with that one. I don't know that I've done it with a therapist, but I've done some similar ones on my own. Yeah. What have you found to be helpful so far?
Well, like, I'm curious with somatic therapy because every body's different and everyone needs different things. And even someone who's experienced dissociation, like what specific exercises they'd give you, like if it's different than mine and like what that means. Like, I don't know. It's just interesting to me.
Right.
I've done one where, like, she's told me to just analyze my hands, like, when I'm at home. Like, to just look at my hands and just, like, be very aware that they are my hands and, like, touch certain things and press certain things. It sounds so kind of, like, redundant or, like, that you don't need to do it. And even, like, it's really hard for me to focus to do it. And I don't realize it's hard for me to focus to do it. But I'm just that, like, dissociated from my body.
Right.
And then another one is like pushing against the wall and like finding your strength in the wall, like pushing as hard as you can until you can't, and then pushing off and like trailing backwards is another one.
Wow. Yeah. That reminds me. I know some people talk about the 5-4-3-2-1 method, which is using the senses to ground. So, you know, if you're finding it hard to ground, you can name 5 things you see, name 4 things you hear, name 3 things you can touch, name 2 things you can smell, and 1 that you can taste, or, you know, for whatever senses are available to you. But I do have some friends who deal with pretty severe dissociation, and that exercise can sometimes be unhelpful. They've found that a more direct grounding approach of like touch, like literally touch the chair under you, just pay attention to the surface of the chair, just feel your what parts of your body connect to that surface, and just like really simplify it, can help them kind of feel the weight of gravity again and come back into their skin a bit. So it is an experiment, and I think people, you know, hear the somatic exercises and it seems silly because they seem so simple.
Yeah.
And yet, if you haven't flexed that muscle, you might not realize how many unconscious behaviors you have all day long that are not only affecting your mental health and your emotional well-being, but they're sort of coming together to create a story that you embody every day about who you think you are, how you think the world operates. So, for example, I used to only, and I'm doing it now actually, and it happens in new environments. If you notice, everything about my position is crossed.
I kind of feel like
So, like, my legs are crossed. I have my hand over my organs, right? So, I'm like protecting myself. And my legs are not facing you, so I'm already almost like, okay, maybe I'll get out of here soon.
Yeah.
And I know that that's my tendency when I walk into new spaces. Some of my friends are just like, they'll sprawl out.
Comfortable, yeah.
Yeah, but everything about this body language is like, okay, we're new to each other. I started to notice, okay, who are the people I'm with where this body language happens? Oh, interesting. Maybe that's a signal that that relationship doesn't feel as safe, or that environment doesn't feel as safe. Now, what do I want to do about it? Is this my, you know, growth opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to dare to relax into it? Or is this like sensing that there might be a real threat and a reason that mm-hmm. you don't want to be in that space anymore. So, like, you know, just getting in touch with the story, starting to connect the dots where if you find it hard to name your emotions, but you realize at some point, okay, when I'm feeling, you know, anxious, my palms sweat and, you know, my heart starts racing, and you start to name the sensations, well, the next time that those three things happen, it helps you find the word for it. Ah, this must be anxiety again. Yeah. A little bit sooner. So you're just connecting dots and you're getting a map of your own mind yeah. and body. And it's the most empowering thing ever mm-hmm. because no longer are you like overwhelmed in situations and going, I feel stuck and helpless and I don't know what to do. I'm in a rut again. Now you're like, I recognize this thing. Aha. And I've practiced these other tools now in moments that weren't as stressful mm-hmm. so I can call on them. And it might be a little tough at first, but you start to flex that muscle. And now you're like, I feel resilient. Mm-hmm. Like, things can go wrong in the day. And instead of that ruining the entire day, I can say, all right, this was a tough moment. I'm going to reset, you know, process, release. And then I can shift my state and I can move forward. It's mm-hmm. not always that simple mm-hmm. or, you know, it's different for everyone, but no matter what, I think this is the best investment you can make in the world of self-care and well-being. Get to know your body language, mm-hmm. the story in your mind and body that you're living out every day. And you'll find so many fascinating things mm-hmm. that come to the surface. And the more conscious awareness you have, then you get to say, do I want to keep this story? Or is it time for me mm-hmm. to shed this story and try something new?
Do you feel now in control? Would you say? Because, like, you were describing being out and feeling kind of like that heaviness or like kind of seeping in, and now you feel like the power and like the empowerment of like knowing like I can take control over how I feel.
Yeah, control is such an interesting word, because in some ways I think I would say I do feel equipped mm-hmm. to manage whatever the moment calls for, but in some ways it actually feels like I've learned how to embrace the moments where I feel out of control without it ruining my mm-hmm. sanity in that moment. So it's almost like a new relationship with control and feeling out of control. Before, when I felt out of control, the fear kicked in and it was like fight or flight, clawing at anything to get control back. Or unconsciously, I would do things like, you know, like run away from the situation mm-hmm. or get really defensive or whatever that mechanism was that activated. And now I feel like, okay, I'm feeling out of control. This is bringing up all of those parts of me that want to do these things. Mm-hmm. What do I want to do in this moment? So it just creates like breathing room to be able to tolerate the discomfort of sometimes feeling out of control. Mm-hmm. And then like actively choosing, okay, in this moment, actually, there is someone running at you. You do need to run yeah. away. Versus like, oh, this moment, they just said something that totally hit like that insecurity. And I'm feeling like I want to prove to them that I'm not that person. But like, is that necessary? Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, it creates like breathing room mm-hmm. to negotiate with the feelings of control versus being out of control. That's my experience. Yeah. But, you know, different for everyone.
Out of curiosity, like, what is your experience with dissociation specifically? Like, how does that, like, how does it, like, in your point of view look like? Like, how does it feel?
Yeah. Whew. So as a teen, I was diagnosed with something called alexithymia. Mm-hmm. And it's a literal inability to name and identify what you're experiencing in your body. So like I said, I wouldn't be able to really feel the emotions, even though you could see on my face that like, oh, this person's crying, or you're super happy apparently. And I wouldn't really have an embodied sense of that on an internal level. And so I also recognize that my strategy for like really high stress environments was to just essentially I call it going offline. Mm-hmm. That's like the term that's always made sense to me. It's like, oh, I'm offline. And on the outside, you probably wouldn't be able to tell.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still interacting, I'm listening, I'm responsive, but it's almost like, you know, if my body were a computer, like I just actually shut off. Mm-hmm. In reality, my body is still listening and storing experiences, but my like awareness is just, this isn't an accurate term clinically, but it's the term that feels right for my experience. It's like a denial. Mm-hmm. Of what's literally happening.
Yeah.
Like I used to spend a lot of time in the church, and I used to spend a lot of time in different spaces where like there were really strong moral rules around like you can and can't do this, and don't do this because you'll be tempted for XYZ. Now I know I was just dissociated, but I remember being like, I don't feel any temptation at all in any of these places. I must be like really good or something. Yeah. You know? And now as I've come back online, I'm like, oh, I do see how that would, like, now I feel
like
that
a
kind
person.
Of yeah. Yeah. It's been an interesting journey for sure. I think one of the areas I'm still working on, which feels really reassuring, is that when I'm having a really difficult conversation with a partner, I know on the inside I'm just learning how to practice staying online. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have to tell them, hey, I can feel myself shutting down, and I'll have to do something like stand up and like move my body for 10 seconds or like step out of the room just for even 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. So that I don't shift into that super low lethargic mode and fall asleep. But then when I come back, if I let them know, hey, I promise you I want to finish this conversation, I'll be right back if you give me a moment, I'm just sort of like tuning out from a body standpoint, then I can come back and like get through it. So that's like my current practice, is learning how to stay online in the difficult conversations.
Would you say that's the biggest trigger, is like difficult conversations for that?
Oh no. I mean, you kind of have to look back at your history and notice what were the situations. Mm-hmm. Where dissociation was the chosen tactic. Mm-hmm. So I think the audition room for me, you can only be so vulnerable with a stranger. It's not like a two-way conversation in there. You're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, great, next. And you're like, well, I guess I'll just take my feelings with me and go now.
Yeah.
So I think after a while, I sort of compartmentalized in that space. My home also, there's addiction and abuse in our family, and it happened every day. And so I know that was also a place where I would kind of hide in my room and go offline, so I didn't have to feel the emotions associated with the stuff I was hearing or witnessing or experiencing. So that's another environment. Whenever I fly back to visit family, like, it's amazing. My body remembers.
Yeah.
And it instantly gets tired. And so I, for years, have been learning how to like work with myself to maintain a sense of stability and safety, so that when I go into that space again, it doesn't automatically revert. So I think there's a variety. Like, do you notice there's kind of like specific spaces?
Yeah.
And people?
I think mine is like a general dissociation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like more like derealization, depersonalization. Mm. Like both of those kind of simultaneously.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I have specific triggers. Like, I'm sure I do, but I actually don't even notice it. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that I do, but I definitely feel it more as like a day-to-day kind of thing.
Yeah. For sure. My former partner experienced depersonalization, derealization. So I learned about you know, their kind of embodied experience of moments, and you know, they found that the 5-4-3-2-1 method. Mm-hmm. Was helpful.
Yeah.
They started mapping the triggers, and so they now, at least, you know, obviously this is their story, so keep it like very vague, but they now at least can notice when they're beginning to experience more severe dissociation, and they can either kind of maneuver it, or you just know, like, okay, I'm aware that this is happening. And then on the other side of it, here's like the self-care I'm going to do tonight to come back into my body when I'm back in my own, you know, home space. Mm-hmm. And I respect and admire them so much, because they've like figured out a bit of a system for themselves.
Are they kind of like on a path to getting out of it, would you say?
I'm not sure. I don't know that we ever talked about it being something that goes away so much as the awareness and the resilience that come with it make it seem sometimes like it's just less of a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Compared to when you were a kid to now, do you think your nervous system's improved or?
Totally. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's like the most exciting part of the science and my lived experience is you can experience tremendous transformation. Mm-hmm. I mean, truly, the level of healing at the nervous system is so worth it. It improves your quality of life in every aspect. Obviously, it improves your overall health and well-being, but like your relationships, your career pursuits, everything. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about it, is because I am, you know, an example of this brilliant therapist being so patient with me and teaching me these tools over many years. And as I practiced them, yeah, my life is literally like night and day. Mm-hmm. That, you know, if anyone's listening and they're like, ugh, I don't know when this is going to end or get better, like there really is hope from a neuroplasticity standpoint. Your system really can change quite a bit. And interestingly, just to geek out, you don't have to keep all of these geeky parts in here, but sometimes when we're trying to learn a new skill, if we are sort of really serious and focused about it, it'll take, you know, a large number of repetitions before it gets into our system. Interestingly, if we approach learning that skill from a fun place, it drastically reduces the number of times you have to practice a skill before you can form the habit. Some of this stuff obviously isn't fun to explore, but if there are certain skills where you can find an approach that feels a little more playful or lighthearted, mm-hmm. your body can sooner adjust to that new norm as opposed to kind of beating it into your system.
It's pretty much just like less resistance.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like coming at it with less resistance.
Right. And it activates different parts of your brain that are like, you know, creative and mm-hmm. receptive and
mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, just because I don't want to repeat like what you say on other podcasts, are there questions that you
I love that so much.
Do you get asked the same thing over and over?
The same exact thing.
What do people ask? Like,
yeah, I mean, of course they ask like, what's it like working with the Jonas Brothers and Demi Lovato?
That's like a question right off the bat they ask.
Oh yeah,
like, interesting. Yeah. That would have never come up.
Yeah. And I thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, and I understand, like, we'll talk about the mental health company that I started or Dear Hollywood podcast, so mm-hmm. I get it. But that's something I've always wondered. I'm like, why do you all want to ask the same thing that people can hear anywhere else? Wouldn't you want an exclusive or something that digs deeper into an area? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so besides like the joke, I'm just curious, like what's been touched on and what you're like over talking about just for now. I'm also just curious what people ask you over and over again as well.
Yeah. Well,
and we don't have to get into them. I'm just like, what are the headlines? Like, that's interesting.
Yeah, totally. I think they'll ask, you know, about cast dynamics a lot. They want to know anything. I think that could be a headline like that Allison said this about another person. And they'll say, you know, something as vague as like, how do you think child stardom affected your mental health? And I'm like, it's funny you should ask. I've dedicated an entire podcast to unpacking this. Maybe you want to go take a listen. Mm-hmm. It used to be a lot about just Disney projects. Mm-hmm. Now it's finally evolving. Yeah. They'll also, you know, they'll ask about queerness and sexuality, but the questions just usually feel kind of, they're just so surface level. You know, it's like, tell us about what it was like to come out in public. You know, and I'm like, well, yeah, again, I wrote an op-ed. You can literally read that. Do you want to dig any further?
Yeah.
You know.
You've talked like a little bit with like resistance with your faith and like how that kind of manifested. Was that kind of in like tied into your sexuality or when did that kind of?
Yeah. I think because I was so invested in a particular faith system that I didn't even consider queerness as a possibility, especially within myself. So I think I was just, you know, very much kind of tunnel vision on whatever the expected traditional roles would be for, you know, a female in the church. You know, I think when people hear folks talk about, you know, stepping away from the church or deconstructing, a lot of people jump to the conclusion of being like, and now we're anti everything.
Yeah.
And while I do want to honor the amount of issues that do need to be addressed, I also have to see all of the components here, which is I learned so much about community. I learned certain values. I did learn a lot of spiritual principles that stay with me. I hold them differently now and interpret them through a more expansive lens, which I know for believers in the church, they're like, no, that's the problem. It's only this way. Like, it's one way. And I always invite people to reflect on all of the layers that have influenced the way they interpret scripture, for example. Like, if you're reading the word and you're growing up in California, you will read it through a Californian lens. If you grow up in Europe and you're reading, it's going to be a different lens. If you grew up in other spaces, on top of your particular pastor's mind and body and upbringing, on top of the sect, on top of the, you know, and people, it's interesting how people are like, no, but this is what it says. And I'm like, I don't think, perhaps, I invite you to consider that maybe we haven't reflected on all the layers of bias and influence that are, you know, embedded in what we think is an objective interpretation of something. So as I deconstructed all of that, it shifted a lot of things. And then I didn't really recognize my queerness until I literally just one day, like, looked up, saw this woman and was like, what am I feeling? And when I told you that I like used to feel like no temptation, right? I was like, wow, I must just be, you know, a stand-up Christian. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
because you weren't into the dudes. Like, got it.
Yeah.
I date people, you know, of all identities, but that's when I had to start wrestling, right? And being like, wait a second. What I'm experiencing with this person models all of the attributes that, you know, we're supposed to be trying to follow in terms of Christ-like behavior, but the person themselves is supposedly, you know, according to my church at the time, like an abomination of, of a relationship. And then when you're really deep in the church, you know, then it's like, people will say, well, that's because the devil is trying to masquerade as something good, but it's really hidden and it's going to ruin your faith. This will be the end of your faith. I mean, there's a lot there, but I realized that it was hard to know who to trust, what to trust, how to trust. But that period, I spoke with tons of pastors. I spoke with mentors. I spoke with scientists. I was just like, help me understand what's going on in my system and what I need to do about it.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone ends up finding, you know, their own path. But I would say falling in love with a woman was the best thing that ever happened to me because it cracked open my entire worldview, how I saw myself, other people, what I thought love was, like. So as messy as the relationship ended up becoming, it was like the biggest gift.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Was that the catalyst, like that relationship with this girl, to kind of start questioning your faith? Or was it kind of something building before?
You know, maybe it was a catalyst, but I think I had already taken some like college courses. It's so interesting. I was so deep. I thought I was going to go into like training to be able to lead a congregation. Like I was in it.
Yeah.
I think when I started studying historical movements and other influences, I started having questions about like, wait, why do we claim this one straight and narrow answer when this was actually just regurgitated by someone who was a part of a whole other cultural movement? from a different era when there were different rules, when there were different needs, like it just, so I think things were stirring. Mm-hmm. And then falling in love with someone, there's nothing like that to be like, okay, now I really got to find answers, because if I get this wrong, so to speak, mm-hmm. then I'm going to hell, and that's not what I want. Mm-hmm. That's something that I can't say this part yet, but I'm working on a project and I'm going to be unpacking this a lot more.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What age were you when you like fell in love with this girl?
I think I was 18 or 19, okay. or maybe I was 20. Yeah. And my sister is a lesbian, mm-hmm. and so I didn't think, I was like, oh no, the queer person in the family is my sister. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not also queer.
Do you have any brothers?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh my God.
Yeah. And, you know, in varying ways, like yeah. very individual experiences of queerness. I'm like, you know, the pan, gender fluid, like mm-hmm. all encompassing.
Something else I was interested in, like, to your comfortability, but to what was your like journey into, or kind of like how you landed on, I want to change like my pronouns, like what, how did that come to like to about, like,
yeah. So when I first heard people talking about pronouns, again, I didn't identify with that personally, and I thought like, oh well, if this helps someone feel affirmed, sure, I'll do it. But I didn't really understand it. And then I joined this dance convention faculty, and it's mostly queer and trans and non-binary teachers. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, that's how it shakes out. And, you know, there were so many people using they, them pronouns, and I had never been in a community like that. And so I was like, okay, let me learn more about what this means to each person and where I stand on things for myself. And I think it was because I felt so accepted and loved in the fullness of my humanity that it enabled me to say, if I'm being honest with myself, those pronouns, not, I know they're just a couple different letters, mm-hmm. you know, but like acknowledging that there is a different experience of personhood mm-hmm. than what is categorized as, you know, womanhood feels important and worthwhile. That is a true experience I've had my whole life, but I didn't know there were names for it.
Yeah.
But when it was, once I was in community with people and I thought, oh, okay, you're still gonna love me even if I shared this part of myself, mm-hmm. it makes such a difference. I think if I wasn't in community, I don't know that I would have felt even like comfortable being public about that. Mm-hmm. And now, like, I still don't lead with that. I still expect all day long that people, you know, just by seeing me will use she, her pronouns. And that's, for me personally, that does not, you know, bother me so much. Mm-hmm. But I will say it feels so, I didn't realize how important and amazing it would feel when someone does honor your humanity in that mm-hmm. way. Like, on the one hand, it's just something so simple and small. And on the other hand, it's like a deeper acknowledgement of being mm-hmm. like, ah, tell me who you are in your own words.
Yeah.
And just leave space to like more, feel more seen and understood.
When you say like this specific part of myself, like accepting this specific part of myself, like what do you mean specifically? Like, what do you feel like with either changing your pronouns or like with this group saw that you could express? Like, what specifically are you talking about?
Yeah, that might be hard to put into words, but you know, I used to have mostly straight friends yeah. and there were just ways in which even if they were showing love and care and support for my queerness, they just didn't quite have the firsthand mm-hmm. experience of all the small things that happen in the course of the day that, you know, when you watch shows and you only see hetero couples or, and it's, you know, it's improving now, but like, or when you listen to someone talk about gender roles in relationship and you're like, well, that's not really what mine looks like mm-hmm. at all. And we're still functioning very well. You know, you just don't have that kind of firsthand awareness. And so the support still comes with a bit of a distance. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're among a community that lives it, breathes it, eats, sleeps, you know, similar lived experience, there's just a deeper resonance. And for me, at least with this community, an immediate sense of safety. Like I could just, I didn't have to explain my answers for things mm-hmm. and say, okay, here's my perspective, but I know I'm going to have to retrace and give you like 10 other steps before you get why this is my perspective. Mm-hmm. Among other queer folks, trans folks, non-binary people, I was like, oh my gosh, you've all wrestled with the same questions. Yeah. Some of us have read some of the same texts. Some of us enjoy, you know, the writing of certain, you know, queer poets or mm-hmm. whatever. And it's like just that deeper camaraderie, sense of family. And that, I think, yes, for you know, gender fluidity, I realized I was not very educated mm-hmm. in the concept and construct of gender. So it allowed me to educate myself. And then as I educated myself, I realized, oh, I definitely relate to, you know, the non-binary experience mm-hmm. like dramatically, exponentially more than these other definitions of mm-hmm. gender.
I out of like, and stop me anytime if this is like too personal or something mm-hmm. you just want to keep private to yourself, but like honestly, I have other friends who are they them, so yeah. it's more so like I'm trying to gain an understanding of like how your like specific experiences, and like I don't know if this is so, is it like almost either like a celebration of like, this could be completely wrong, but like the masculine parts of myself as well mm. or is it like I don't feel just feminine, like, or is it neither of those things, like what is it, or how would you think like right, to describe right. it?
Yeah, and it's of course so individual, and what's interesting is when we use words like feminine and masculine, it's still kind of upholding mm-hmm. this binary way of understanding. I think for some people who end up using non-binary to identify themselves, which I would say I'm in this category, there's a more expansive experience of humanity that's neither just feminine nor masculine. It's almost like you're given a Crayola box and they have the pink and blue crayon. And mm-hmm. I'm like, but green and yellow are my jam. Like, yeah. So where do they fit? And so using the binary to explain being non-binary, it still kind of like limits mm-hmm. the way to express what our human experience is. And I would go so far as to say, I wish we gave people of all identities way more space and permission to explore who we are, because you don't have to be non-binary to, you know, be a woman who says, yes, I want to integrate more masculine parts of myself. You can mm-hmm. be a woman who is in touch with her masculine side. Like that's mm-hmm. so the expression and the identity, like it's all very nuanced. But I will say this idea of womanhood in particular, I remember in my case being a young person and legitimately being so confused about the term woman and mm-hmm. womanhood, and just being like, anytime I was doing something that I thought was sort of what we ask of women, it just felt like I was wearing a costume over and over and over again. Now, I'm sure plenty of women could go on their own journey and be like, yeah, and that's when I said, like, down with the patriarchy mm-hmm. and let me reclaim these parts of myself. And I'm still a woman, and I'm a woman who does all of these things. Great, cool. Mm-hmm. For me, I found along the journey that I was like, oh, yeah, nope, that's not how I would describe the way my mind, brain, and body experience life. Mm-hmm. I'm one person making sense of it in a super disjointed way right now. Like, definitely listen to more stories mm-hmm. and people will have different reasons, right? Like, my former partner is trans and I think would say more like trans mask. And that was even, at first I was like, wait, so many words, like, what do all these mean? Until you get a sense of it and you're like, oh yeah, no, actually this isn't it's not as complicated as I thought. Mm-hmm. But that education, that opening to listening about other people's experience, I think will serve all of us in just like tapping into more of who we are as humans.
Mm-hmm. You were saying earlier, it's normal for you to get called like she, her pronouns, and you're kind of just like, is it something you've desensitized to? Like, do you still feel that kind of like, oh, like when someone says something like that? Like,
yeah, I think at first I was scared to ever expect anyone to use other pronouns. So I just sort of like denied, you know, that I would prefer someone to use they them pronouns for me. Now, the more that I've allowed myself to connect with an authentic sense of self, it does hurt a little bit. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't expect people to know at first glance or because of a previous career. Like, I'm not assuming that you've been researching my whole personal journey here. Mm-hmm. So of course you have other reference points. It usually just in those moments, it reminds me like, oh, this person must not really know me very well. Mm-hmm. It just reminds me like, this is probably a stranger, because now within my close community, like, I don't hear she, her ever.
Yeah.
You know, I was in a dance class yesterday and the teacher, you know, saw me trying something and I did something incorrectly. And so he was like, yeah, she's doing da da da. And I looked around the room to see who he was talking about. And I was like, oh, right, duh. Yeah, I get it. I get it. So for me, I found that if that's the hill I want to die on, then I'm going to be hurt so intensely all day, every day. So I try to, you know, have a deep understanding of the reality of the culture and society that we're in. Like, not everyone has even heard of using other pronouns, especially like when I travel and I'm in spaces, I'm like, oh yeah, no, this, I don't expect you to, okay, we're just gonna, I'm just gonna be here and I'm Allison. As long as you refer to me with, you know, general kindness, that's appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are you traveling that you experience that? Is it just basically outside of the States?
No. I've found that international, well, it depends on where.
Depends. Yeah. That's why I asked. Yeah.
You know, this sounds kind of stereotypical, but you know, coastal places tend to be a bit more
just different languaged
with like using they, them pronouns. Whereas I'm from Ohio and like, like if any of my family members listen to this who live in Ohio, they're probably going to be so confused because I've never even brought it up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
To your family in Ohio?
Everyone's in Ohio.
Okay.
Except for my mom and middle sister now.
When did this kind of transition start? Or like, I guess like decision, or not even decision, but just kind of clarity?
Yeah, like awareness.
Awareness. And then, and why haven't you told your family?
Yeah, this is, hold your sound. It's funny how like having a conversation with you, it's easier to speak about this. Whereas trying to explain this to my loved ones who have known me one way my whole life, even with queerness, I haven't really had a lot of deep conversations. You know, family members also have their own beliefs around it and discomforts. And so it can feel a little hard to have a nuanced conversation when you're coming to the table from very different places. I don't know when I will try to have that conversation, if ever, to be honest. You know, it's probably been like half a year that I have embraced like people actually using them pronouns for me. And it's so weird. I never thought I would be this person. You know, I was like, of course, supportive of other people, but something clicked and it was like, it's me. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to roll with that. Like my parents, you know, don't, I even tried to like bring up a little bit about like, this is what gender fluidity might be. And it's just kind of,
does it like land on them? Like, do they?
I think my mother and my father would both really try to understand. I think they would want to be supportive. I don't know at this point if it would make sense to them. It's not something that usually makes sense after one conversation, yeah. especially if it took me decades to figure out within mm-hmm. my own self.
Are they older?
Yeah.
How old are they?
Yeah. My mom had me when she was 40. So
my mom had me at 39.
Yeah. Yeah. It. Yeah. So she's 70.
Okay.
Damn. My dad's a few years younger.
Okay, yeah, that is tough, like a tough conversation at that, because that's just like a complete different generation.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're like with the shits now, you know?
Well, I think there's also this perception of like, oh, you're an artist in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Like, California really changed you. Now you want to mm-hmm. call yourself a different gender. And they think it's like, mostly
you think that's
like
what you would get. Like, you think that?
Yeah, I think like from family and even just other folks around the country, the perception is like, why do you think you're so special that you couldn't just be a normal person like the rest of us? And I'm like, no, that wasn't the reason. I will say maybe being in like a creative space, mm-hmm. I do have more exposure to seeing lived experiences in a bunch of different ways. So I maybe feel a little safer to experiment and explore, but no one turned me into this, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
especially with queerness. Like, some people really think that queerness is contagious. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yo, that's not how it works.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
If you find out that you are queer, or there's a part of you that, you know, identifies with queerness, like, that's not
because someone told
you to become that.
Sexual orientation, it's like the one thing you like can't control, that actually no one, well, like, I can't say no one judges you, because that's so not true, but like no one judges like your taste. If you're like, I only like this kind of guy or whatever, this kind of girl, it's like, okay, like you can't control it. Like, I get it. Mm. So it's like, you can't like control that you're attracted to girls or you're attracted to guys. It's like the one thing everyone's like, yeah, like, we get it, like, you can't do anything about it,
right?
But I guess not, you know what I mean? But at least like that's how I feel.
You
like what you like, right. It's like sexual attraction.
The sensations are there.
And I think then that becomes like, people have so many options as to how they want to express their sexuality. For some, like, I know some folks in the church at the same time, we were in, you know, this Bible study together. They were discovering their queerness at the same time I was discovering mine. Their choice was to accept that part of themselves, but in turn be celibate. Mm-hmm. And so they still viewed it as incorrect or unnatural, but it was sort of, they viewed it as kind of like, this is just a cross I have to bear in this lifetime, but I'm not going to act on it because that would be, you know, incongruent with my belief system. Mm-hmm. That's not where I landed, which I'm personally grateful for, but I think they're probably grateful for their path as well. Like, mm-hmm. I wish for them, you know, full liberation and deep love, however that can come to fruition for them. And I know that for me, I realized like, oh, this, again, it took a lot of deconstruction, but many years later was finally like, oh, having a crush on a girl, for me, what I believe is, it's not gonna send me to hell. Mm-hmm. But I definitely was convinced. I did conversion therapy.
Damn.
I had people, you know, laying hands on me to get the devil out of my, like, exercise the spirit or the demon out of my body.
What age were you doing this at?
Oof, like teens, right?
Is this before the girl?
Before and during.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were saying that you were like going to different priests and different like psychologists, mm-hmm. trying to figure out like what's going on. Is that during this kind of period?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had some mentors, mm-hmm. who had been so helpful and encouraging in so many ways. And then the second I said, I think I'm queer, were like, the interpretations were wild. Mm-hmm. One person was like, I got a vision that Satan put a target on your back because you're supposed to lead the nations in Hollywood to Christ. And this is your biggest distraction. If you say yes to this, it will be like the end of you.
Huh? Was this a priest or who was?
This was a spiritual leader in the church.
Okay.
Who has millions of people who have bought mm-hmm. the books and are still following the teachings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What does a conversion therapy look like? Did you ever watch Loanthony? Mm-mm. Do you remember Loanthony on YouTube? He was like one of like the big, most like openly gay, like fab, kind of like cunty. I probably shouldn't say that, but like he was just like so like that was his whole thing. He was like so kind of like sassy, like kind of Perez Hilton vibe. You would definitely, I'll find a video.
Yeah,
I'll insert a clip. But he was like just one of these like very openly gay, one of the first openly gay people on YouTube.
Hmm.
And he went to conversion therapy, and he's now completely still to this day, like straight. And like taught and post videos like from like preaching God and stuff like that.
But
he didn't explain his like the actual process of conversion therapy. Just explained that he was saved by God. It's quite. Okay. I mean, I don't want to say sad is the right word, but I guess like to me it's kind of sad. Like I don't want to like discredit like that religion and that like way of like going about living. But like I don't know. To me, it's like. It was like that was like his full expression. Now it just feels like a little bit like brainwashy. I'll say it because that's how I feel. But yeah. So I'm curious like what like your experience with like I'm just like curious like what is the actual process? Like is it just verbal? Like is it
no? There are different forms of conversion therapy.
Do you have an intervention like that? Like that kind of.
So this is the interesting thing. I voluntarily chose to try and convert myself.
No, I kind of think that's cool in a way because it's like you really ruled out like I want to know the truth and you were open to all ends.
Yeah.
So this is one of them. Like I actually think that's cool.
Well, it also just came from a deep fear of losing. I mean, my identity, everything was modeled, molded around God and faith. And so it was like, I remember crying on my bed in prayer, being like, please help me understand how to either get rid of this part of myself or how to clean myself of this thing that, you know, got onto me spiritually, like just trying to make sense of it, thinking this was going to end my life and I would lose favor with God. I would be disobedient. You know, I was like, okay, I'll do conversion therapy. And people have different experiences. Some people actually go away to like physical locations. You know, you don't have access to like phones or devices, and you'll go through daily group sessions, individual sessions, similar, you know, to like other kinds of
inpatient thing almost.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, whatever the activities are.
Were you going to say similar to cults?
No, I was going to say camp. Okay. Like certain camps, but yeah. You know, we won't roll out that association. The activities are usually, you know, modeled after whatever their curriculum is. So I know that, I forget where I read this or watched this, but someone had to wear a backpack with like tons of rocks in it. This might have been in a movie too. And the rocks represented, you know, the sin of homosexuality. And like over the course of, you know, however many days or weeks, when you're carrying that extra load, it starts to wear on you. And so there's this metaphor that the young person or whoever is supposed to start equating like, oh, okay, if I would just remove this back, I could get rid of this weight. I could experience freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have like those kinds of activities. They have, you know, confessional, all kinds of things. For me, I didn't go to any public location. I did it with my Christian therapist.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to kind of like use cognitive behavioral therapy to reframe things. And we talked about urges and what to do with urges. And it's interesting because you use the word, you know, brainwash. And if I could respectfully...
No, you can rebuttal.
No. Okay. I'm trying to find the respectful way of being like, let's put it this way. We are all conditioned.
Totally, yeah.
And so there is a sense of programming in all of our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do read certain things long enough, they can take hold in certain ways. And so I think in many ways, my experience was trying to just drill something in until it stuck. But I'm so grateful simultaneously, you're getting the whole story, but simultaneously I was talking to this other pastor who I thought was going to be like the scariest one of them all of like, you need to get rid of this now. And instead it was so unexpected. but I was bringing up like really nuanced questions. Like I told you, I was like deep in here, like, help me make sense of this. And he said, because of the questions you're asking, I need to let you know something about my stance on this. And it turned out he had a way more expansive understanding of God. And he was like, most people do not like have the capacity to go where you're going with your questions. So I'm just going to share some of these other texts. They're from different authors. Some people in the church would probably be mad that I'm sharing them with you. But like, I want to see what you find out there. And the very person I thought was going to be like, you know, the worst authoritarian person was like
the wisest.
Well, you say what I say, why you say wise. Other people might say bad.
Yeah.
But
would you say wise? Would that be the word you?
I think he saved my life.
Yeah.
Because he showed me just a whole range of you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And then you walk into a room and someone's like, by the way, all of these things are also perspectives from, you know, historical figures who were considered wise at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe read these first before you draw a conclusion. And that, I think, is the reason I continued deconstructing. That's kind of what I wish when you say the word like brainwashing. Sometimes I just wish before we drew conclusions, we first interrogated what has influenced our brain or our minds. Because I think if we did that, we might open up way more than we ever thought was possible.
The rocks in the backpack is like I don't want to say the word genius, but like it's like sinisterly genius. Like that's like a very skilled kind of way of giving someone like a physical, like, and with their mental wrapped up, like you take the backpack off and you suddenly feel away. I'm just like listening to that and I'm like, holy shit.
I still have compassion for the people leading the programs because they're really, as far as I remember, most of my experiences were people who were like so well-intended and really were like, how can we make this effective? Because we love you and this is how we think love ought to look. Therefore, we're going to do everything we can to support you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until years later when I was on the outside being like, oh, those tactics were, I know they didn't mean for them to be manipulative or abusive or traumatizing, but whoa, I had no idea. Like, I would not go about things that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, to your point, like, I have had friends on here who, were missionaries and like just very like preach like there to spread gospel and like very much
make disciples
and they're like the like some of like the coolest people I've ever met and have made me like because we didn't grow up religious and like
which is amazing
but also too like that like to your point like we're all programmed in different ways and like I'm not here to say like I know truth because I don't think I do so like and like to like you're saying like these people are really like well-intentioned and like in their eyes like that is true and like it is like in at least in the West like the most followed religion so who am I to say like that they're wrong you know because I could be wrong like I don't know and I'm not gonna claim to I really don't
that's generous
like I actually but like it's not even me trying to be generous like I actually like surrender to the fact that I don't know and I'm not even going to remotely claim that I do because I feel so ignorant honestly and I am cynical so I almost want to be wrong so bad
right.
I'm like praying honestly right maybe not the right word but praying that like I am that they are right honest and I mean that maybe not in all
but like apps. A version like, right you're a like version that's of something it. Yeah.
That's something
maybe not that costume
maybe life after death and maybe like purpose that we're here and like a higher power and I would love the idea of like a creator knowing everything about me that sounds cool I'm into all of that but yeah no I hear you in the sense of like it's not like all bad like they're not like these bad people
right.
It's just like we're just different and this is where I've and you've now like fallen on this side of like the scale I guess in a sense
and the spectrum I would say I'm like always hesitant I feel like people listen to me and I try to be kind of ambiguous about it because having any conversation about spirituality is just so it deserves so much time, and mm-hmm. like you got to be able to use things that aren't there, that are metaphorical, to describe something that's beyond mm-hmm. you know, what you can tangibly touch or whatever. And so it's, whenever I put things into words, I'm always nervous that people will try to draw conclusions, like, okay, well, where are they on their faith journey? Are they still in? Are they out?
In or out?
Yeah, you know. And I'm like, okay. But all that to say, I invite everyone to explore the depths of their own soul mm-hmm. and heart. And the thing is, with faith, I think that was the part that was so interesting, is when I approached pastors, I would say, I just want you to know that my intention here is to prove God right. Mm-hmm. So I'm coming to you with these questions because I want to know the truth of God's word. And I felt like, you know, I had this kind of notion that if I kept truth at the center, then whatever wasn't truly truthful would fall away. Mm-hmm. Because if truth is true, it's truth prevails, always going to be true.
Yeah.
So I would go to them and say, like, just so you know, I'm here because I want to serve God. I want to be obedient. I'm not coming to you because I want to disobey, or I want to find my own rule book that's more convenient. I'm literally trying to, like, be a perfectionistically good Christian mm-hmm. here. But what I'm finding is that the stuff this congregation has been claiming is God might not be the full story.
Yeah.
And so I'm still committed to, you know, seeking truth and wisdom, but some of the, you know, constructs have fallen away now. And to someone who's never explored things in that way, they might just be like, nope, you're not checking the boxes of what it means to be a Christian, or mm-hmm. what Christianity looks like, or being a good person looks like, whatever it is. But for me, I'm like, actually, I dare you to say you trust God so much that you would be willing to let go of the stuff that you thought was God, that you learned actually isn't God, even if it made you look like an outcast to the people in your own church. Mm-hmm. And when that took shape, I was like, oh yeah, I know that my commitment here is still to seeking truth, still to understanding what is love really. All of these things we talk about, like, in the church, is like Christ-like principles, fruits of the Spirit. I'm going to dig in as far as I can to those. And along the way, sorry to say, y'all, but a lot of the tenets of the church just fell. And I was like, okay.
What do you mean by fell?
As in, like, I'm experiencing the fruits of the Spirit and Christ-like behavior outside of the church more than I'm experiencing it inside the church. Mm-hmm. My queer relationships exemplified God's character mm-hmm. more than any of my other ones. Not saying there aren't wonderful straight relationships, but, like, it was so interesting. And my fear was, oh no, like, people are gonna think that I've fallen away from God. Mm-hmm. And so I would uphold that. And I'm like, I wonder how many other Christians actually might have a more expansive view of God if they weren't concerned about other people thinking they've, like, fallen, mm-hmm. backslid is the term.
Yeah.
And that may not resonate if you didn't grow up in a religious setting. But now I'm way further out there. But,
well, it's just, you're basically just describing, mm-hmm. like, search for community, too. You know, and, like, having found that, which, I mean, church is so, like, supposed to, like, elevate the human soul and, like, practice good morals. So if you can find that somewhere else, that's, like, basically, like, your own religion, you know, and, like, your own kind of sense of faith.
I can hear believers listening to this and being like, no.
Oh, totally.
I still have that filter of, like, what are they saying? Yeah. But, like, yes, absolutely.
But you know what's funny, actually? But, like, the comments that I do get from kind of, like, more, I don't know if, like, hardcore is the right word. Mm-hmm. Tell me if that's wrong. Like, more
sold out for Christ?
Yeah, like, very, very in it. They actually, like, only really say positive things. Aww. Like, of, like, thank you for talking. Even if it's, like, kind of, like, me questioning, like, the Christian faith, which I have done because, like, I'm, like, just interested.
Yeah.
They're always, like, thank you for talking about God. Like, thank you for, like, having him like be brought up on this podcast. So it's him, never actually LOL, bad, yes. Even when I'm questioning it or saying, so they are kind of really nice. So yeah. Thank you. And that's the kind of like the beauty of right. At least like what it was supposed to be is like that kind of understanding. And I'm sure it's not everywhere, but yeah.
Yeah. And there are like wonderful people who are Christians. Like I'm, totally. And there are wonderful churches. Like I will never say it's mm-hmm. black or white in that way.
Do you still go to church?
Oh no.
Okay.
Nope. Nope. And I don't know if I have a reason to.
Yeah. Do you still believe in God?
These are the questions. So depends on how you define God.
Okay.
I don't feel the need to say that God is a him. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. I would say there's an expansive life force driving existence, perhaps. If you want to get into like, are there morals attached to, is it a good or a bad force? Like that's something you need to explore. Also like free will versus predetermined destiny. Like that's something you got to explore. So there are a lot of aspects of this word God that mm-hmm. would need to be
defined
for me to say, you know, the reason I don't answer it explicitly is because I know if I say yes, whoever's listening is using their version of God to say, oh, okay, they believe that. And mm-hmm. if I say no, they're still using their reference point of God to make sense of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm like, until we have agreed upon terms, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like I can answer that simply. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever pray?
This has been kind of an arc for me because still coming out of the church, I did have that knee-jerk reaction of like, go to something bigger than self in moments of need type of thing.
It's almost like a human intuition, I think, even sometimes not even like religion, like technically it's religion based, but we weren't brought up religious and I still prayed.
Yeah, yeah.
Intuitively.
Yeah, I think there's like a connection to a larger consciousness, awareness, mm-hmm. intelligence, you could say God. I would also say that now my experience, we're getting all of the things, I haven't said this on any other podcast. There was a shift for me. The way I used to view God was in this kind of power dynamic and hierarchy and separation where it was like, there's God and then there's me. And so I'm kind of powerless, but God is my strength. Now, the way I view the world, people, creation, as a Christian might term it, is recognizing the divinity in mm-hmm. all things and all people. And so it's less like helplessly reaching out for help and more like channeling a deeper awareness of who I am as an expression of creation. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah.
There's like a new state of being that's come with it. And interestingly, again, the fruits of the spirit, like love, joy, are more apparent in my body now than they mm-hmm. ever were. And I need to like honor that. I can't deny that my growth and transformation as a human has coincided with letting go of certain like ideologies, but mm-hmm. actually more deeply internalizing and embodying mm-hmm. and expressing, you could say the word faith, I guess. Yeah, in this way. It's, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a lot to unpack. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's nice that you didn't ever like lose or become like, well, maybe you did, but it, like at least you got brought back to something larger than yourself and like didn't kind of fall into like being nihilistic. Or
yeah, I mean, I have.
Oh, you did?
Right? Okay. Like I did. And it wasn't right then. It wasn't like, okay, you know, if this fails, then now I'm quitting everything. Atheism edition. It was actually later mm-hmm. that I just continuing to deconstruct and being like, wait, what is the meaning of all this?
Yeah.
And I have plenty of like existential dread that kicks in for sure all the time. I've always, I guess, identified with the word seeker. I've always been curious. Mm-hmm. I've always been seeking. So I think that will remain.
Sound check.
Yep. 1, 2, 1, 2. Yes, the mm-hmm. seeking aspect
yeah.
has always remained. Even if I'm seeking nihilism in that moment.
Yeah.
I'm always trying, I'm like, yeah, we want to reverse engineer things. Let's figure this out.
I could actually tell that you were curious, like a curious person by like watching and listening to your podcast, just like by how like deep you go into it. No, I really appreciate that. Like kind of like, first, like the story aspect, not to like loop this back into like a whole thing, but like, like you tell like kind of like your story, like the, like what's like kind of occurred and then like the analyst of it. And then you ask them, like ask them the question. It's almost like essay format, like in poetry as well. It's very poetic as well.
Well, thanks.
I was like, is she just saying this like off the fly? Like, cause you're, no, but it's, but I
definitely not. No, I had to pre-write that because
It's beautiful. You did a good job.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad that there is a place for our overly analytical brains to share. Like, I know I'm not the only one who asks 20 questions one after the other. So
I understand.
Well, I am grateful that you allowed us to have a conversation that's different from every other conversation I have.
I know, I'm glad.
I wasn't prepared for it, so that's where I'm a little nervous. I'm like, this won't be as, you know, neatly tied with talking points, but
what do you mean by talking points?
As like, in like being able to articulate how I feel about something. These are topics that I usually only speak to close friends about, and we already have like our shorthand language, and you know, now imagining other people listening to it, listening in almost on our own little convo is like nerve-wracking, but in a way that I am embracing more these days.
I also think you articulated yourself and explained yourself very well.
Well, thanks. Okay. Phew.
No, yeah. It's pretty clear. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It felt like soup inside
my
brain.
No, it's probably because it was just like on the fly.
I will say, after being in the trenches and contemplating life, I have finally learned that sometimes it's smart to just have fun.
Yeah.
And so, even though my work hours are very long, I've started taking dance classes again, but my new goal is to take all of the styles I used to avoid because I was either bad at them or like just didn't know where to start. So I just ordered tap shoes. And the last time I tapped, I was three. And I took a beginner ballet class. Oh, I mean, I'm, you know, the absolute worst. But I think I'm finally okay with, you know, just being new to something and not needing to be perfect right away. So that's been bringing so much joy into every week. The dance studio is close to, you know, where I stay when I'm in LA, and I'll just go through their schedule and add like at least one class every day, and that's become my work break. And it, of course it, you get movement in, but it's been a joy. I'm like taking dance hall, popping, waving. I'm taking a heels class today.
Wait, is that like, have you seen like play dance? Is that like
kind of
like
Playground
that?
LA?
Is that, like that kind of heel dancing?
So it's similar in that you are learning choreography. This particular teacher has a very different style and flavor of heels. So a lot of playground teachers are kind of like
burlesque-y almost.
Burlesque-y and like pretty like on the nose. Like this is very explicitly sexual and sensual. This teacher today has a little bit different sensibility about them. I took their class one other time. It was my like first heels class, because again, as someone who has been felt so awkward in terms of like traditional feminine expression, I've pretty much avoided anything with heels and movement, but I'm wanting to explore like what is an authentic version of moving in heels. Is it possible for me? What does that look like? I went to the class and the teacher's first question was, you know, does anyone in here like not identify as a lady before I start being like, all right, girls, all right, ladies. And I thought more people would raise their hand just because this community, we're, you know, humans of all identities. And so I, you know, I just kind of raised my hand, but I happened to be the only person in there. And then I was like, oop, I'm a little self-conscious. But they immediately were like, great, thanks for letting me know. So today we're going to say like friends, we're going to use other terms. I was not expecting that because usually anything with heels and a lot of women are like, it's very, it could be very girly, very like traditional feminine. So that felt like the safest environment to try this. So I'm going back for my second round today.
Today,
yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm going to go work on this project that's undercover. And then that's going to be my break.
you were saying earlier, like, you don't like to not be, like, perfect at something. Is that, like, a perfectionist kind of quality that's throughout?
Yeah, that's been since I was very young. And I actually, yesterday, just pinpointed where that started. Mm-hmm. I have been trying to find this for, like, 15 years. Yeah. And yesterday, it was as if I found the missing thread.
Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I wonder how this is going to change my life, like my present and future, now that I kind of see how all of this started. I have a feeling it's going to be really liberating and that I'll be able to enjoy life way more. So I'm excited about that.
Was it a particular moment, or was it like an age like bracket that you're realizing, or like what, like you don't have to share what it was if you don't want to share what it was.
No, it's something that I remember happening around 3 years old.
Oh my God. You can remember to then.
I did have a strange, like photographic memory. That's and
awesome.
Early, I do have a lot of early memories, and it happened around 3 years old. When I tell you, I've connected plenty of dots. This was like the one dot that I couldn't figure out how all of the other connected dots connected to each other. This is the dot. And if I, you know, write a memoir and share things, I'm looking forward to piecing that together. Because I know other people will be able to relate. But yeah, when you catch a story from a young age and then it informs the way you move through the world.
Totally.
Like, that's the full circle moment of being like, okay, how has my mind and body made sense of things so far? What's the story I'm carrying?
Yeah.
And like, how can I liberate myself to tell a new story? So that's what I'm in the process of, like reclaiming dance as something that's fun and beautiful, not just business oriented. And it's like the most exciting chapter of my life so far.
Hell yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah. What are you excited about this week?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I'm not like, it's probably the last like time I should be filming a podcast. I'm like not in a good place, but I'll probably take this out. But like, yeah, but honestly, I'm just like, but I'll figure it out. I'm in an era, like a dark era.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll get through it. We'll get through it, maybe.
You will. You will. And the, yes, we could stop rolling first and talk more, but it was an extended dark phase for me until recently. So I'm just seeing the light. So
do you ever have like periods where like you didn't have any hope?
Not that long ago, actually, I spoke with my friend Devin, who also has a podcast, about this a bit. Because it felt like the moment that there wasn't hope anymore, it was hard to figure out a reason to keep going at all. And it was like pretty scary territory, pretty empty, pretty dark. It wasn't until, you know, many things happened over a period and I had an ounce of hope that I was like, I now understand the value of hope. I didn't really get it as more than just like a positive word until recently, where I was like, I can't feel any of it. And I'm like clawing for anything, anyone to show me something that could be hopeful. So yeah, I can relate to that. And my mind can go to very bleak places very easily. I think some people, maybe from the outside, you know, most of the time that I'm on camera, it's like, let's speak to the light of things. But for me, I'm like, as light as I can be, that means I can swing just as far the other direction.
Totally.
So like, just know if you're seeing me, you know, bright as the sun, that's because I've visited like the darkest cave. Definitely have had those periods.
It's super common in like the creative business, like just being like, because you have to be highly sensitive to like be really good at like, as like a musician or an actress or like any sort of artist, are like the most sensitive people. And they feel so much. I had the guitarist from The Strokes, like Albert Hammer Jr., on talking about the the swing of good and bad.
Yeah.
Like how, like, you, if, like, cause he was, you could just tell, like, just this, like, heart of a person, like, had, like, just one of the most genuine, like, soft people I've ever met. Wow. Like, just so kind. But just talking about, like, that swing that you can have that you're describing, which is just, like, it, the people that can experience, like, the most good and can actually give the most and have the most love, like, can go, like, the most dark, like, so quickly. It's it's quite alarming, honestly.
Yeah, or at least they've experienced firsthand, you know, the deepest pains.
Totally.
And that from there, then you just, then compassion feels different from them. Love feels different from them. And it's like, some of the most loving people I know have endured, you know, some of the worst things. And no, you don't, doesn't have to only work that way, but it does really round out your ability to, like, truly offer care to someone from that place of deep knowing of, like, what it meant when you felt no care or something horrible happened.
It's almost like your heart's, like, outside of your chest. So it's like you can feel so much and then feel, like, extraordinary pain.
Yeah. Someone told me this the other day. Sometimes when we're talking about wanting to be empathetic, we mistake that for, like, actually trying to merge with the person in, like, a codependent way, where I'm trying to empathize so much that I'm now losing myself in your experience.
Like, whereas, taking it on, you mean?
Yeah, like, taking it on. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I retain my sense of, you know, self and wholeness and help relate, listen to, carry, but not merge with, then I also can help build a bridge for you to, you know, move beyond your experience. Whereas if I crawl into your experience with you so much, now we're both just, like, in the pit together.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting to learn the art of, like, deeply empathizing, but also realizing if I crawl into the well with you, I just need to make sure that I bring, like, a rope behind me so that we can pull ourselves out together. Mm-hmm. So that we're not just both then struggling without a sense of hope, you know?
Sometimes, I don't know if you've, like, you, like, relate to, like, to even just feeling absorption without trying, you know, of just, like, the weight of other people.
Totally.
Just, like, even my psychiatrist, because, like, he, like, I can tell is, like, a sensitive person or whatever. It's also just people, but, like, it's magnified to some. Mm-hmm. And he has to, between each patient, like, walk around the block a couple times to, like, sage himself and then, like, go back in, because he's like, it's, I have to shake off the energy, because he absorbs it and he can't help but absorb it.
Right.
You know?
And like you said, that is by design, biologically. So we all on a spectrum, like, have the ability to absorb things. Some, yes, seem to be more, like, open channels than others. And those sort of mini tools or ways of processing, expressing, releasing, shifting are essential, I think, to not feel, like, just so overwhelmed all the time on during the course of a day, because you're just going to be in different spaces with different people and then different events and interactions. And, like, if you are, you know, not quite able to retain that sense of differentiation, then wow, life is just going to be like a roller coaster constantly. Mm-hmm. So you do have to find those practices that, like, reset and, like, recollect. Okay, this was me, that was their stuff, this is my stuff. Find that kind of boundary of self.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and then that way, yeah, hopefully you're less, like, sort of blown with the wind or, like, taken by the waves, whatever metaphor we want to use. You have, like, a sense of grounding. You can be rooted, I guess. Just trying to throw in as many nature metaphors as possible.
No, I love it. My psychiatrist, last thing I'll say is about this sad topic. He showed me a video of this polar bear getting stun gunned. And, like, have they shown this to you?
I've seen this. I forget what the context is, but I remember.
Yeah, it was basically to show, because, like, they, like, go to sleep and then they wake up and like the first thing it does is shake off yes. the trauma.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and we don't naturally do that as people. So yeah. that's how they don't store trauma in their body and like how we are, all of our trauma stored in our body.
Yeah.
So that's like their version of like shaking it off, going around, literally shaking it off. And like basically what you're describing, like having the barrier, finding a practice to be able to do it. At least notice it, that it's kind of seeping in.
Yeah, and shaking off the stress is actually a legitimate tool that we can use. Mm-hmm. My company, Movement Genius, has like 250 tools like this. So if anyone's watching or listening and wants to, you know, try things out, definitely check out the website. We have a getting started category where you can learn like 10 of these stress relief techniques mm-hmm. That can help manage anxiety or help you, you know, find some calm before going to bed. Or, you know, if you deal with insomnia, there's like a certain somatic skill in there called toe tapping that has been helpful for some people. Like I said, everyone's different, but once you practice these, then mm-hmm. you feel like you can process some of that energy in the body. But shaking it off literally is a legitimate mm-hmm. it's a legitimate and helpful tool for many people. Mm-hmm. I just always say, like, start slow and only explore what feels manageable, because if you end up, you know, shaking more intensely and then it feels more activating, mm-hmm. you just have to make sure that, you know, you're in a space where you, if things bubble up, that you feel like you can either talk it out with someone or release it and carry on in a safe way. But yeah, you can pick a song that you know,
shake it off, Taylor Swift.
You could, I guess. Yes, you could. And just give yourself even 3 to 5 minutes mm-hmm. of, you know, kind of gentle wiggling, shaking, and then taking a moment after, a couple deep breaths, noticing, okay, what am I experiencing in my body? The sensations, the feelings, the thoughts, and maybe even ask yourself, like, what do I need in this moment? And maybe your body will be like, I'm actually really tired. And some of this is just like, it's been overwhelming and I need a break. Or mm-hmm. like, actually, it's just hunger and thirst and I forgot to eat lunch and so that's why I'm irritable. Or maybe it'll be like, oh, I didn't realize the conversation I had with my friend from yesterday is still mm-hmm. with me. So, you know, if you choose to shake it off, just give yourself the right space and time to integrate. Yeah. That's my, you know, facilitator hat, being like, just approach it manageably, y'all. Take care of yourselves.
I like, your like delicateness of like talking to I'm guessing like yourself and other people, but I like that. Like I think that's, I could adapt that more because it's just more honest than I think just being like, get over it.
Right. Something I mean. Wish. Yeah. I will say telling myself to get over it has never been effective in getting over
you're
it.
Right. Yeah.
And so I had to give my first therapist a lot of credit because she used such compassionate language mm-hmm. to the point that it was irritating at first. Yeah. But now I'm like, oh, right. Because usually the part of you that's feeling alarmed or upset is usually like a younger part or vulnerable. A wound, yeah, that is vulnerable. So you do have to approach it with care. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once you start getting into that kind of habit of speaking to yourself with more compassion, then it doesn't feel as ridiculous or cheesy. After mm-hmm. a while, you're like, oh, no, it's actually a relief. Like,
yeah,
I used to be so hard on myself to try and get things done. And sometimes it sort of works, but then you're just sort of like suffering through it all. Mm-hmm. And at some point it clicked where I was like, well, if what I'm seeking is more joy in my life, but I'm trying to punish myself to get there, that feels counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. So like, if you're seeking joy, you get to ask yourself, well, what would feel joyful? Yeah. Like if you're seeking healing, what would feel healing? Like you get to heal along the way. You get to enjoy life along the way. That was so simple and yet so profound for me because mm-hmm. I was over there like trying to push myself into healing, mm-hmm. you know, and like fix it this way. And I think my therapist was just like, yep, one day you'll recognize that like cramming your body into a shape doesn't usually feel as good as like mm-hmm. gently guiding yourself into a new form.
Yeah.
And adapting over time to a new way of being.
Yeah. It's basically like inner peace that we're just like resisting pretty much.
Yeah.
Just like to, once those two things are friends with each other and like have like, can have a nice conversation with each other, then you have peace, and like that's basically like what
that's real.
Yeah,
the real thing, the yeah. word integration. I will leave that as the last thing. Check out like just the concept of, from a psychology standpoint, yeah. integration, wholeness. If you can embrace all the parts of yourself, dark, light, messy, neat, like whew, and find some harmony mm-hmm. within that, wow, like your health and well-being and your life transform.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
You guys, you found a light place.
I know,
we did. Oh my God, I hope this is a light place. Yeah, I guess it has some, it has some like, yes. Yeah, it went somewhere positive. Okay, good.
Next time I want to ask you all the questions.
Yes, yeah. Allison, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I loved having you as a guest and you were amazing.
Thank you for having me and featuring all of the fun little sounds outside.
Yes, we got some nice sound effects.
Yeah. Yeah. Hope to do it again.
I hope to do it again as well.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.